You can run on adrenaline for years. Then it starts showing up at home, at work, and places that you don't really want it to be showing up. Your sleep is light or non-existent. You snap at the small things. You sit in the same room with your family and feel like you're so far away that you might as well not even be there. You tell yourself to handle it alone because that's what you learned to do. This episode is going to give you a clear way to stop doing that. Our guest today, Johnny Gilpin, has worked in medicine for decades and works pediatric emergency shifts. He lays out three supports that kept him steady when work and loss stacked up: faith, three people he can call at any hour, and counseling, plus conversations with fellow veterans and other folks. He explains how to build that small circle on purpose and how to use it before you hit a breaking point. You also hear why helping other vets, teaching, and writing can reduce the load that you carry at home. Before I get into this episode, though, I want to take a moment to raise awareness for something that I feel is deeply important to our community, the Global War on Terrorism Memorial Foundation. This organization is working to build a permanent national memorial in Washington, D.C. to honor the service members, families, and civilians who are impacted by the Global War on Terrorism. This memorial will become both a tribute to those who have served and a way to ensure that their sacrifices are recognized and remembered for generations to come. If you'd like to learn more or find out how you can support their mission, visit GWATMemorialFoundation.org. Now let's get into today's episode. Hey, Johnny, welcome to the show. Really glad to have you here.
Oh, thanks for having me. I appreciate you taking the time, inviting me on.
Yeah, you bet. Before we get into the conversation today, would you mind just taking a minute to introduce yourself and tell the listeners a little bit about who you are, you know, for anyone who might not be familiar with you?
Yeah, my name's Johnny Gilpin. I currently live in Oklahoma. I'm a pediatric emergency medicine PA. I work at the Children's Hospital in Oklahoma City 10 days a month. And then I work doing veteran C&P exams, doing that 5-6 days a month, traveling all over Colorado, Kansas, Oklahoma, Key West, other places. Yeah, everybody has that look, a few other places. And then myself and a couple other guys, we help other vets help get their disability stuff going. And then we just started a new company helping partner with some 503B pharmacy to help veterans, first responders do wellness programs, helping with the GLP-1 like tirzepatide and semaglutide and stuff to help them at a discounted rate, help them lose weight. So we've been doing that. And then we travel with our program, Art of Medicine. So always got something going.
Yeah, it seems like you got a lot of plates spinning at the same time. So I appreciate you, you know, carving out a little bit of time here to come on the show and chat with us here. And so you started out, is that correct? I just want to kind of clarify.
Well, I started out in, I did a couple of years in the Oklahoma National Guard as a helicopter. I worked on Hueys.
Okay.
And then joined the active duty Navy.
Okay, so, cool. Yeah. So you kind of transitioned from one to the other, but which, you know, we talked to a lot of people and, you know, that happens from time to time. It's always kind of cool seeing people switch branches and stuff and seeing, you know, how that plays out. But so your work now is more in, you know, like emergency medicine and plus all the other stuff that you were talking about as well. And I kind of want to jump into this mindset that I think a lot of veterans have as far as like, I can handle anything. I could do anything, you know, anything that's thrown my way. I'm, you know, I'm big enough, I'm bad enough, I'm strong enough, I'm, you know, whatever, quick enough. I can handle it all. And this shows up in a lot of non-military settings, right? In our health and our relationships and our work and our, all the things that we end up doing, but we don't always have all the tools available to us to handle everything. Right. And so, you know, how do you look at that situation and like, you know, kind of help people, coach people to figure out how to ask for help or get the help that they need before something turns into a bigger, you know, almost emergency type situation, right?
First, always do as I say, not as I do. You know, you know, it's been 3 years ago, this next coming month, we were working, we'd lost six kids in about 3.5 week time frame. And I'd been involved with several of those kids. It just part, you know, it's a team effort in the emergency room, you know.
Sure.
And one of the docs is a really good friend of mine. I've known him for a long time. And this is my 31st year in medicine. And at the he looked at me and he goes, "How do you do it?" And I said, "Do what?" And he said, "This." And I said, you know, referring to just the question you just kind of asked me. And I said, "Well, I don't do it really well. I'll ask my wife. I'm an absolute mess." And, you know, that typical deflection. And, you sure. know, he said, "Well, you're still here." And, you know, his question, you know, being or his implication or implied statement is, you know, why are you not a statistic? You know, we still see that 22 a day vets, you know, we, you know, 1% mm-hmm. of all first responders are 1% of all suicides are first responders. You know, I'm still a paramedic. I'm still on the state's disaster response team. And then we lose one physician a day to suicide, twice as likely to be a female, you know, add all those up. And it really bothered me. And that question, I went back to him and I said, you know, I'm not any better than those guys we've lost. I'm not any different. I'm probably not as strong. I'm probably weaker. But I said, there's three things that make me different. I think one is my faith. You know, I grew up Methodist. My wife has me going to a Baptist church. So I'm a really poor Methodist and I'm a really bad Baptist. But as you, as you've seen, you know, there's, and I've seen enough in life, whether it's the military or as a first responder or just life in general, there's something greater than all of us, whether you call it God or, you know, whatever you believe. For me, it's God, you know, Jesus and whatnot. But whatever you believe, there's something greater than us. And that faith drives me. Two is that I have, and I told him, I said, I have this Rolodex of friends. And if I'm talking to anybody under the age of 35, I have to show them what a Rolodex is. Most people don't even know what that is anymore. But what it is I have this Rolodex of brothers and sisters that I know it's going to, if I call one of them, somebody's going to answer the phone. Maybe not the first one, but maybe mm-hmm. not the second one. But, and they're going to be there. And it's a reciprocal relationship. So that's a key factor, is it, that this group of people, it's a reciprocal relationship. And the third thing is those tools you talk about. My dad was a Vietnam vet. Yeah. And we'd lost 14 guys 4 days before my 25th birthday. And I came back home and my dad had told me, don't talk about it. You know, he said, you know, because somebody had asked me a question about it. And, you know, you try to figure out how to explain it. And, you know, and my dad said, don't talk about it. They don't care. That they may say they want to know, but they really don't want to know and they'll never understand. And I don't know, 18 months later, he was diagnosed with Agent Orange cancer. And he took me, I was came home and we went to a meeting at the Veterans Readjustment Center. And he told me, he said, don't wait 30 years to do what I did. So, you know, to put all this stuff together. So when I talk to guys, that's one of my missions now, is to go out and talk to people and stand there, you know, and say, hey, you know, we had this, you know, we talk about this thing called the foxhole mentality, you know, King Solomon talks about in Ecclesiastes 4:12, he talks about one can be overtaken. You know, I'm you know, here, two can be stand back to back and conquer, but a three-stranded cord is not easily broken, right? Well, there's a 1943 sure. Army manual that says the three-man foxhole is the best defensive position. One's always on guard. One can be resting him. You get the picture. So whether you take it from a military manual or a biblical manual. So I talked to guys, who are those people you're going to call? You know, there's a guy out there, Travis, how is it? I think it's how you say his last name. Post-traumatic growth talks about, you know, people, who's this person going to call? You can't take it home and talk to your wife. You're going to call your partner, your brother, or your buddy. And, you know, yep. I just tell people, you know, they're standing here, you got to talk to people. You know, I'm talking to my students and stuff. You talk about it. It's not always hard. And my wife was talking to me and we were making a comment yesterday, and I still go to counseling. We still, you know, we've had a great relationship. I always go to work and I say, well, how's it going? I said, well, I woke up this morning, my wife didn't strangle me in my sleep. And my boss said, well, that doesn't sound like a very good relationship. I said, well, we got a great relationship. I just can't do anything about what I do in her dreams at night. So, but is that, you just got it, right? Is that we were talking about, we still go to make our relationship stronger. But I was talking about, you know, sure. The counselor, and I was talking about it, and I said, she's like, well, you can come home and talk to me about this stuff, and some things we can, but I, you know, the first three shifts of this year, we lost a child every shift. And I told her, I said, I don't want to bring that evil into the house. And that's, I think mm-hmm. that's the problem. The military, what I love about the military, or a paramedicine, cops, firemen, this paramilitary training gives people a conversation, and I'm rambling here to your question, but it gives us this concept that I can accomplish anything I put my mind to. I choose to do these things, right? I can do these things. And that's what sticks in our head, you know, that paramedic mm-hmm. who, you know, walk out here on the street, you know, doing all these things that they do. I can do this. I can do this. I can do this. The fireman, the cop, the military guy. The problem, you know, they teach us how to do all this stuff. They teach us to go to war, how to fight. They teach us how to go in burning buildings, you know. Teach us how to, you know, assess a situation in a burglary, whatever your profession is.
Right.
But they don't necessarily teach us how to come home. They don't teach us how to break that down. And I think that's the hard part. And that's why I'm like, guys, we have to lean on each other. And they yeah. teach us that in the military. You know, that's one thing about these organizations. They teach us independence, but they also teach us teamwork. And I think,
right,
you know, Sebastian Younger talks about, you know, that it's people don't crave war or that environment. They crave the tribe. That's what you miss.
Right.
You miss that, yep. that cohesion, that unit, somebody in a mission greater than us. So mm-hmm. I always tell mm-hmm. them, find something that's a mission greater than you. Surround yourself with that type of people if you can. And if you can't find it at work, find it at home, find it in church, find it somewhere. It does exist.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. And having that tribe of people, you know, even if, you know, it's as small of a group of people as three people, like you were saying, like if you have some people around you that you can reach out to when times get tough and you can talk to. And I think that's the important thing is having that conversation with somebody and talking and just working through things that's helpful as opposed to just sitting with your own thoughts. I know I'm my own worst enemy when it comes to my thoughts. You know, I can sit there in my head and those thoughts will kick my ass and I'll just be going spiraling down a rabbit hole because those thoughts just get the better of me sometimes. And, you know, if I had nobody at all that I could talk to, then I'd be stuck with those thoughts. But having someone to be able to talk to, it allows me to kind of get them out. And, you know, you don't, like to your point, you don't always want to necessarily bring all that stuff home and talk to your spouse or talk to, you know, someone in your family. But even that's better than nothing, right? If that's all you have is just so that people, you know, that they're there and they want to help, be able to help you. But at the same time, having someone who kind of understands what you're going through, who's been through something similar, you know, in your case, another doctor who's lost a patient or something like that, who might understand a little bit better what you're going through versus maybe a spouse who has no medical training or anything like that. It never lost people like in that kind of environment. So, you know, it might just be easier that way to talk to someone who does understand it. But getting that those thoughts out of your head and into the world and letting somebody else give you their two cents, I think can help reframe your perspective on things too. And not to minimize what you're going through or anything, but just more or less to, you know, kind of let you step out of your own way and let somebody else kind of help you figure out, you know, what's going on. And sometimes just talking it out helps tremendously, you know, just by getting that out there. Right.
Just voicing it, you know? And so, you know, that's the passive aspect. But I think one of the things that I found that helps us, is the active portion of that. And that's that reciprocal relationship is that, and where if we try to go home and say, well, my wife doesn't understand, or my parents don't understand, or my husband doesn't understand, you can't necessarily make them understand. But if you can talk to them, teach them, you know, and work with them or help them with something, that's where I always say, find a group, find a tribe, find something. You know, I still go, you know, up until the pandemic, when we still had groups and stuff where we get, you know, the group thing is with the VA is not, it's become kind of twisted since the pandemic, and I haven't been able to truly go back. But a lot of times I would go, some days I would go because I thought, you know, man, I'm having a really crappy day. Some days I went, thought I had a real crappy day till I listened to somebody else. And I'm like, man, my life's not as screwed up as everybody else's. But sometimes I went, you know, just because I had the opportunity to show somebody, hey, there is a light at the end of the tunnel. And that's that active aspect where you're helping somebody else if they want help. Now, you know, and I think that's when you if you get into AA, this is not anything, this is me reading, not ever been truly involved. But one of the things that I think, and I have reading the book, and, you know, from a book that was written in 1930s, and I got one of the aspects is that if you're that sponsor, one of the best things about whether you're a sponsor is that's an active role. So now I've gone from a passive role to now I'm an active role. And there's a growth. So I try to tell guys, get in an active role teaching. You know, they always say, well, those who teach can't do. That's absolutely false. I mean, there are those who can't do that teach, but there are teaching. I learn so much. You know, I go to work every day and I learn something new every day, but I'm also teaching. And I have to learn and prepare and stuff. So anyway.
Yeah. Yeah. No, and that makes sense too, that the active component of it, because, you know, part of it, and this is probably not even the point that you're trying to make, but also part of it is that, say you are a sponsor in AA or something along those lines, if you are setting a bad example by going back and, you know, taking a drink or, you know, whatever, and getting drunk or whatever the case may be, then that you're like, I'm letting that person down too. And that is all the more reason to stay, you know, sober and not go down that path. And so, you know, you're doing it for the other person, but you're also helping yourself at the same time. And it's a reciprocal relationship. Exactly. Yeah. And so that's a good way to kind of look at that. And there are lots of groups and, you know, you mentioned AA, but that's not the only type of group that's out there. There's even, you know, group therapy for, you know, mental health type things and other stuff like that do exist. And, you know, I know, like you said, COVID kind of destroyed some of that stuff, but they still do exist. They're still out there. If you want to look for them.
Yeah. Yeah, there is a Celebrate Recovery, which covers anything. Mm-hmm. It just got where the VA, their groups, you had to be at a specific time and you had to go. And I work shift work. So my weeks, I may work like tomorrow, I work Tuesday, and then I work Friday, and then I work Sunday, and then, you know, then I work a Tuesday or a Monday or a Thursday, you know. So, and if you can't come on a regular basis, right, they won't let you keep coming, which
that kind of thing's tough for people like you who don't have a set schedule and you can't always commit to it. But finding something, some sort of group like that is, I think, important to get that community aspect. Even if you have nobody else you can reach out to, at least now you have a group that you can go to and you can talk to and you can have, you know, somebody there. You may not have necessarily a Rolodex, but you have your group that you can go to at least, you know, once a week or something like that, where you can get that conversation going. And, you know, even other types of things too, hobbies and stuff that you might be interested in, there's people there, and then you kind of grow your network that way as well. So there's lots of options to all that. But, you know, I think the biggest thing is being able to have that environment to get your thoughts out, your story out, whatever it is. And actually, speaking of stories, I want to kind of switch gears just a little bit here.
Sure,
but
go ahead.
You also help veterans and first responders and all the, you know, those types of people to get their stories out, right? You kind of have a like a publishing arm of what you do and helping with that.
Well, yeah, we started one. It's not grown. You know, we started it for ourselves, myself and some other guys. I'm a Tillman Scholar. Pat Tillman Foundation paid for me to go to school, which is it's an amazing organization if you're not familiar with it. For any of your guys out there, if you're getting in a school program and looking for a great opportunity, think about applying to be a Tillman Scholar. It will change your life. And so I started writing. I got selected to be a War Horse Writing Fellow. If you're not familiar with the War Horse Journal, it's the War Horse Journal. TJ Brennan is the editor, former Marine, 1-8 Marine Fallujah. He's the guy who broke the Marines United story several years ago about the harassment of the female Marines. Great dude. So I got to go to the Washington Post and some other stuff. And so I've written 3 articles for them. So started there, and I wrote my own book. And then we've got some other stuff that are publishing for our stuff. And we've had some guys that I've helped them get their other stuff doing. And it's, I've had a couple guys come to me, and we've got some things in the works. It's called 8404 Publishing. We've got some cartoon books we're working on for some other people, but yeah, I've worked with guys to show them how to publish and get their stuff done and find other routes. And so, yeah.
Sure. Yeah. And I think it's important too for folks, especially in these lines of work, you know, whether it's a veteran or first responder, you know, healthcare professionals, any of those types of people, to be able to get their stories out there, because I think the general public knows what they see from Hollywood and TV shows and those types of things, but they don't know what, you know, you as an individual, what you went through, and or somebody else as an individual, what they went through, and what life is really like for those folks. And being able to tell those stories, A, will help the general public kind of understand what people go through, you know, for anyone who reads those books, but also it helps those individuals who are writing those stories process whatever it is that they went through, I think. And I think there's a lot of healing that can take place through storytelling. I mean, it's not for everybody for sure, but it, you know, there's a lot of people out there who can benefit from those types of stories, right?
Yeah. So storytelling comes in multiple. I just had a friend of mine who just finished, he went to, it's a songwriter. There's a deal out there for songwriters where they help you write songs. There's a song Aaron Lewis just published a while back called They Call Me Doc. If you get a chance, you can listen to it. There's a couple of different people who have done it, but it was written in this deal where they teach this. And anyway, he had gone to Maine. And he worked with Jason Aldean and then Chris Stapleton's father-in-law. So, and they're publishing a song he wrote. So And then the cool thing about it is that, so they help him write their songs, then they're giving him guitar lessons to help him. And then he's going to get the opportunity to present it on the stage at the Grand Ole Opry at some point. So, you know, so yeah. So, you know, you have that storytelling. There's a whole group of poems and, you know, people doing poems and painting and artistic ways. I got selected to go in March. I'm going to go learn to surf. That could be comical. That may be it could be a whole new comical writing in itself. We'll see how that goes.
Right.
I've never surfed before. So, you know, there's that. And then you have, you know, so the Warhorse Journal, when I wrote my first story in 2019, was a post 9/11 journal. They do active reporting, and then every Wednesday they publish reflections for veterans. And I was the first person that was a pre 9/11 story. And now they write, they've got stories for Korea, Vietnam, World War II, even. And so, I think that's pretty cool that, you know, TJ took a chance on me, and it's gone a long way. But, and when I wrote my, started writing my book, TJ was a great, you know, inspiration and asset to talking. And of course, TJ has a great relationship with the foundation, you know, so the foundation made that link. And then another guy by the name of Terry Weaver, who is a Tillman scholar, former Navy corpsman. You know, Terry just his first, or I guess published his first movie. It's out right now on Amazon. It's called The Beast of Trinity County, I believe, Terry Weaver. But he's published a series of books. He's got a couple that he did that were nonfiction and fiction series. And so, you know, there's so many avenues to tell your story and how you tell your story. You could write the bad things, or you can write really, you can write it all down. I've written some stories that are for me and me only. And when I wrote my book, I had to change the names to protect the guilty. There's, it's, you know, there's a, in what I, were you in the Army? I'm assuming. Or what branch were you in?
Yeah. Army. Yep.
Yeah.
Well, I was yeah. Army National Guard. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, in the Navy and the Marine Corps, we have sea stories. And so the difference between a fairy tale and a sea story is a fairy tale starts out once upon a time, and a sea story starts out, well, there I was. And so I wrote a book of sea stories, really, you know, changed the names, protect the guilty. And the book was done, you know, I wrote all the dumb things that happen that Marines and sailors do. You know, I created this bar. That was basically a combination of two bars that were in North Carolina at Camp Lejeune, and changed some names. And one of the main characters in the book is a really good friend of mine. And when his, that I based it off of him, one of the characters. And when his wife read the book, I asked him, I said, well, what'd your wife think? And she came out and looked at me and said, please tell me you're not Stanley. Like she knew. And one of the other main characters in the book's wife called me and said, you know, I know that character is me, and you know, is her husband and whatnot. And anyway, she wasn't happy with the name that That's funny. Gave her in the book. We'll just leave it at that. But anyway, so, but it was just kind of comical. But you know, I had to put a disclaimer in the book that said, you know, this book was written by a sailor about sailors and Marines, and it is written of how a bunch of E2s, the E4 mafia actually, you know, are. And so it's got cartoons, so Marines can read it, firemen can read it. But anyway.
Yeah. And that type of humor though, like those kind of dumb stories of all the stupid stuff that people do and everything, it can take people back to think about their own time when they were at the bar with their buddies and they were doing the stupid things, and or they were, you know, having parties in the barracks or doing whatever it was that they were doing that maybe got a little out of hand or whatever. But those are the things that you kind of never forget. But sometimes we need to be reminded of those things, some of those good times, because we get so stuck in all the negativity that we have going on in our heads. And so when you read about those kind of stories, even though they're, you know, quote unquote fictional, you know, or so they're not my stories, they're somebody else's stories, but you know, you read those and then you kind of start thinking to yourself like, oh yeah, I was in a similar situation. And it kind of brings back some of those good memories, and it
everybody helps had
you to get out of your own head.
Yeah. Everybody has an H.N. Stanley, and everybody has a Lance Corporal Frankie, the freak in their unit. I don't care who you are. And everybody has that Sergeant Major or whatever, you know. And what was interesting about when I wrote it, like it was during, I started writing during the pandemic, you know, every counselor, everybody you go to says, you know, write stuff down. I didn't need to write the bad stuff. So I started writing this, and it was a cathartic for me. And two guys that I served with, we served in the same unit, 2nd Battalion, 8th Marines at the same time. He was my squad leader, became the Sergeant Major for 2nd Marine Division. And another guy, became the Command Master Chief for 2nd Marine Division, went on to become the MAR-4 Lant Master Chief. You know, these guys wrote amazing, you know, hey, you need to read this book and whatnot. Had some great people who read the book and looked at it. And so, but I sent it to my old battalion commander, or not battalion commander, but my battalion surgeon. And when he read it, he came back to me and he didn't say a single word about the book. What he'd said is that it brought what you said. It brought back, this is when I knew I'd done something different, is that he talked about, he went on to become, he works at the Mayo Clinic and the family medicine residency, you know, he's a great doc. And he said, he remembered teaching us young corpsmen, you know, he just got out of school resident, you know, and it was one of the greatest times of his life. And all of the things that we did. And then one of the guys that we had lost in that 14 was another fellow corpsman. And a day or so before that all happened, his name was Garmin, Brent Garmin. Garmin had gave the doc a Cuban cigar. And doc talks about it. He said he really didn't know him that well, but he just, you know, had known him. And he still has that cigar on a shelf or the mantle at his hunting cabin in Minnesota. And, you know, he talks about, so in his 2.5 page email, not a word was said about the book. And I said, hey doc, can I put this in the book? And I did. I put the Reflections of an Italian Surgeon 25 years later. We're coming up on the 30th. This year will be the 30th anniversary of that event, Operation Purple Star. Mm-hmm. But so it was cool. And so then after publishing it, I had guys that come out and said, man, my wife now understands some of the gibberish coming out of my, you know. But then I had Vietnam vets. I had one guy came back to me and said, you know, I haven't wanted to talk about my service. You know, now I feel like I can. Other guys, you know, just so many great things about it. And that's what writing does. Why do we write? You know, there's a book out there, Why Do We Write? And I wrote a deal on about why do we write? It can be cathartic. It can release demons, but it can also build bridges and talk about things and go from there.
Right.
Never
right.
know where it's going to happen, where it's going to go. You
know, right. Exactly. When you were talking about that just a minute ago, I was thinking back to this past summer. I was visiting some of the guys that I served with in the Army that we deployed to Afghanistan. I ended up writing a book about our deployment and things like that. And I was talking to one of the guys and he said, a lot of the wives have read my book of the guys that I served with. And they read it and they were able to then look at their husband and say, I kind of get what you're going through now. Like, not I get it, like I've been there or anything like that, but stuff that they hadn't talked about or didn't want to, you know, go through in any kind of great detail or anything. They were able to get that from the book that I wrote, and it kind of helped them in a way so that they didn't necessarily have to talk about things that they weren't ready to talk about, but their spouse then understood what they were going through a little bit better.
And so, exactly, it was
just something that, you know, while they weren't there, they couldn't have possibly known what was going on without having that conversation. It allowed them to get kind of on the same page, at least to say, you know what, well, I don't understand what you're exactly what you're going through, but I now know why you're dealing with it. And so it was just that little bit of help for those guys. And that wasn't even the reason why I wrote the book. That was just an unintended, you know, happy consequence of writing the book. It was not even on my radar at the time. And then he told me that, and I was like, holy crap, that's amazing. I can't believe that's something that happened, you know, and I'm glad that it did, because I want these guys to be able to feel like they can open up and talk to people if that's what they want to do. And by having some of those things already explained for them, they don't have to necessarily talk about all the details, but they can do something along those lines. So, you know, it was just helpful, and he was very appreciative of that. So, you know, if you're writing a story, it may not even be you necessarily that it's helping. It may be helping somebody else, and you know, in unexpected and unintended ways, but that's a benefit of doing it as well, you know? And so that was just kind of unexpected, but I liked hearing that, you know.
It made it worthwhile. I mean, because my dad was I was a Vietnam vet. He died at 55 from Agent Orange cancer. He seldom ever talked about his service. You know, I knew he was a Marine. I knew he flew on the old 34s. They flew medevac. You know, I knew he talked about Da Nang and Dong Ha and a few other things, but never talked about his service. And then when he died 10 years later, we found some pictures or some slides and I had them made up, and I put them out on the squadron website, HM 366 or 363, and they were up there for a year, and they would recognize some of the places and, you know, some of the things, but nobody recognized any of the people in the deal, and nobody really recognized my dad. And finally, one guy said, "Hey, that looks like this guy, Jerry Clementi." And so I reached out to Jerry, and he goes, "Yeah, that's me." And he goes, "Man," he said, "I had thought about your dad in 50 years. And, you know, and we talking and whatnot. And he said, "Well," I said, "Well, I can't find who these other guys are." And he said, "Well, Johnny, I don't know who they are." He said, "But I can probably tell you why nobody knows who they are. They're probably all dead." He said, "You know, Marines," he said, "you know, wanted to fly." He said he had a longer life expectancy flying as a Marine than he did as a Marine on the ground. And he said, "But one night they needed 40 replacements. And my dad would never go into we live in Oklahoma where all the tornadoes are, and he would go in. But anyway, come to find out, they'd lost all these people. And my dad was one of four survivors. So my dad never would talk about it. So, you know, you never." And so maybe that's why he was, you know, when right before he died, he took me to these deals and said, "Don't wait 30 years. Now I know now I know some answers."
Yeah, exactly. And you know, it's unfortunate because folks from back then, the Vietnam, Korea, World War II, and everything, they approached the stuff that they dealt with during their tours overseas a whole lot differently than we do now with regards to post-traumatic stress and all those things. Now, like that wasn't even a term probably that people even knew of back then, because they called it all sorts of other names. And, you know, regardless of what you call it, people are people and they're dealing with traumatic incidents. And like we've been saying this whole episode, is talking to people is something that will help. And a lot of them just kind of bottled it up inside and just never let any of that out. And they just kind of stuffed it on down. But at some point that's going to come out somehow. And maybe in not so great ways, you know, maybe it's anger, maybe it's drinking, maybe it's, you know, something kind of more destructive side of things, as opposed to the more helpful side of things. So you know, we want to encourage people to get out there and start talking. But, you know, back then that was almost seen, that was not almost, that was kind of seen as a sign of weakness to go and talk to somebody. And, you know, people are, you know, you say you're going to a therapist or something. It's like, oh, what's wrong with that guy? You know, like there's, that guy's probably something weird with him, and let's stay away from that guy. Right. So nobody did that back then unless they were like really bad off. And, you know, even then it was not as common. So, you know, it's just unfortunate for folks of those older generations that the support and the resources just weren't there the way they are now. And, you know, so I, you know, I'm grateful that they are, and, you know, hopefully it's helping a lot more people than it would have, you know, way back then too, you know. It's just true, different definitely. Times, I guess.
Definitely. Yeah.
So, you know, kind of, you know, moving forward here, you know, we talked about your book a little bit, the kind of publishing and all that kind of stuff. For folks who are interested in learning more about your book and maybe get a copy of your book and hear some of these kind of funny stories and all the dumb stuff that we do as young enlisted guys, you know, where can they go find a copy of the book and, you know, anything else that you guys are taking part in?
Well, they can always get a copy of the book on Amazon.com, but they can also, if they want a signed copy or something, they can go to johnnygilpin.com. That's JOHNNIE, GILPEN.com. That's our website.
Okay. Perfect. And I'll have links to all that in the show notes. And you had mentioned a couple other organizations and stuff, Pat Tillman Foundation, the War Horse Journal, and things like that. So I'll put the links to all those in the show notes as well for folks who, you know, want to check those out and, you know, grab a copy of the book. I'm sure it's, you know, the type of thing that people need to see, you know, like you were saying with that 2-page email that you received, you know, it wasn't talking necessarily about the book, but it was talking about those memories and the things that kind of it stirred up. So like those could be the good times that you can think back on. And, you know, especially for folks who might be struggling with the bad times and they're just kind of dwelling on those. Sometimes it's good to, you know, sprinkle in some of the good times that we had in with the mix of everything else that you might have going on in your head. So, you know, grab a copy of that book and hopefully it triggers some of those good memories for you, you know?
Exactly.
So, well, Johnny, thank you so much for coming on the show, sharing your thoughts and, you know, kind of experiences with us. I definitely appreciate it. And like I said, we'll have all those links in the show notes and, you know, thanks again.
Well, I appreciate you having me on. It was enjoyable. Like I said, if there's anything I can do or, you know, reach out to us. And, you know, for those who are listening, if anybody is struggling out there, you know, always reach out to 988. You know, that's the, mm-hmm. you know, reach out there to that. You know, there's always somebody on the other end to listen to that. And, you know, I'll be honest, I've reached out to it. I had to use it. You know, my wife wound up in intensive care on a ventilator a while back, and I had to walk away and let my coworkers do what they do. And I couldn't, you know, I'm an emergency medicine guy. So I'm not going to tell you, I reached out and used it. So when you didn't, cause so it's there, don't be afraid to reach
out. It's there. Yeah, absolutely. It's there. And it's there for a reason. There are people sitting there waiting for those phone calls to come in and to be able to help you. So, you know, don't waste the resource. If there's something that you need to use it for, absolutely reach out. And I put the link and the phone number and all that in all the show notes, just as a reminder to folks. Hopefully it sticks in people's heads that is a resource out there. So absolutely check it out. And Johnny, thank you again for coming on the show. Really appreciate it.
Appreciate it.